build up for work session today. I'll just let's go straight through the agenda, start by opening the work session. And then on Senate Bill 718. And okay. I'm sure you all remember that this is a bill that says that school districts don't have to pay diesel tax on their fuel. And then we also have the Dash 2 amendments that add a fire district, a rural fire protection district. Anything new on this question?
No, you have the Dash 2 amendment and the Dash 2 revenue impact. That's new material from the last time you met on this bill. And it's my understanding that the Department of Transportation has withdrawn their request to be included.
Yep. So we're not talking about ODOT, we're only talking about school districts and fire districts.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Chair moves adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 718. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Senate Bill 718 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just an observation.
Representative Shetterman.
Just that we are creating an exemption here for fire districts. I know we have a number of other special districts around the state, water districts, sewer and sanitary districts and others. I guess I'm a little bit troubled about creating a special classification. I'll support the bill. I would expect we may likely see some bills next session to bring other districts into this, but I guess we can deal with that then.
That'll be your challenge.
Mm. Okay. It'll be your legacy.
please call the roll. Representative Corey. Aye. Representative Merkley. Excuse. Representative Rosenbaum. Aye. Representative Carroll. Aye. Representative Will. Aye. Representative Witt. No. Representative Ackerman. Excuse. Representative Corbett. Aye. Senate Bill 718 will move to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Volunteer carrier? Okay, Representative Williams.
Okay, carry on through.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 718. Thank you, Chief. Open the work session on Senate Bill 245.
All dressed up and nowhere to go, I guess.
We have the amendments to this bill. We didn't get to this the other day when it was posted. The Dash 1 amendment removes the entire bill and comes to the conclusion that we discussed when Mr. Muir was here, basically saying that we'll just do whatever the federal law says rather than create our own provisions. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Jim Mary had those drafts.
Okay. We're not in public hearing, but Ms. Stoll, I understand you. Did you have something else you wanted to say, just very briefly?
My name is Kathy Sewell from Grand Blonde. I copied this Cass County versus Loose Lake Stand from June 1999, and your secretary brought each of you one. I had mentioned that and given a little quote, but I want you to have the whole thing. And you note in the middle of page 2, that case held, the state and local governments may impose ad valorem taxes on reservation land that was made alienable by Congress and sold to non-Indians but was later repurchased by the tribe. That's figure 611. And I just wanted to add that in my very first testimony, I asked you to either not pass this bill or use this bill to, I don't know how I said it, but to remove that statute entirely, 308-170, I believe it is, from the laws, because the latest law, and in this case, it is case law, I guess, U.S. Supreme Court, said you can tax them all. So I just thought I'd say that. And I'll tell you what, I think their amendment certainly removes, you know, 100% of my personal concern. And I really appreciate their proposing that amendment, but it doesn't follow from existing law at all that they should be removed from taxes. So I thought, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your interest in this bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Representative Kifori?
I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 245.
Representative Kifori moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 245. Is there any discussion? Objection?
Chair?
Representative Rosenbaum?
To clarify, what we're now doing is just clarifying what is existing law. Is that right? Does this represent a change from what we do right now?
Representative Rosenbaum, no, this will not reflect any change that we have under existing law. Just trying to make it clear for county assessors when they read them.
Thank you.
Right. So I recall that was the whole genesis of this bill was to, as it was requested by the Department of Revenue, was add clarity. And
Mr. Chair?
To the extent that the federal government is clear, it does.
Well, I guess that's my question. I'm in support of the amendment. I think that's fine, but I think, as I recall, one of the purposes for bringing this bill forward in the first place was to clarify for county assessors what would and would not be subject to taxation. I'm not sure if we've accomplished that. I think we've sent them to research the law, but I don't know that we've told them necessarily on a parcel-by-parcel basis what is or is not exempt from taxation. But if the department is satisfied and the assessors aren't here about this, why, this certainly, to me, is an accurate statement of what we ought to be doing.
Well, and I think that had we passed Senate Bill 245 as printed, it would have expanded the federal provisions and created some of our own and created some exemptions that don't seem to exist in federal law, and I think that ultimately that was a decision we decided not to go down. Any more discussion? Any objection? -1 is adopted. Representative Kifori.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 245 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kifori moves Senate Bill 245 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? We show those not here as excused and all those in support. Anyone else will sign it? Representative Kifori, would you carry the bill?
Okay.
Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill 245. Thank you. Now open a work session on House Bill 2670, and the only reason we have this bill before us is because it was requested by a member to have this down in the rules for the relating clause.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Witt?
I move House Bill 2670 to the Rules Committee.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation.
Okay, Witt moves House Bill 2670 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 2670. I don't think we're going to get to timber today, so we'll go next to a work session on Senate Bill 1275. Thank you, Steve. We discussed this bill extensively last week. I had a lot of testimony on it. And following that discussion in the public hearing, I asked Paul to draft up some amendments that didn't go to 100% of the sales factor, but went to 80%, with 10% still being property and 10% still being payroll, just to see how that would work out. And with the thinking being that if the issue is competitiveness on the coast, for example, and no one else has gone to this extent yet, that going to 80% would be advantageous in terms of our neighboring states for Oregon, and would also perhaps close a potential loophole that might allow some companies that were vertically integrated and sold only basically within their own companies to essentially escape taxation on their Oregon presence. And I'm not sure if that's still that's entirely true. I think that there's a question about that, but what did you find out, Paul?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just you'd asked me to kind of step back and look at the role of apportionment formula. So did just want to raise several things. The focus of the discussion has been on the economic development impact of the allocation of corporate income, which is really the key rationale behind this change, and certainly has been a factor historically. But there are some other factors as well. You know, if you look back at the principles of apportionment and allocation, and what kind of guidelines you can get from that, one of those clearly is to link allocation to income generation. And that gets back to basic public finance principles that you're tied to the factors of production. The most obvious one is capital. And that suggests the use of some type of a capital measure. In fact, the early allocation formulas were single property based formulas in the 20s and 30s. Kind of the other strain of thought is on the benefit side that the allocation formula should reflect the benefits received by corporations in that particular state. And the third rationale is on uniformity, in which, and this has really been the driving force behind the three-factor formula. It was the reason behind the creation of the UDITFA, which came up with a compromise, equal-weighted formula in 1957, the so-called Massachusetts model. And that's the goal, and I think this is a very important aspect of corporate income taxes, is to try to achieve some uniformity. Because if you don't have uniformity, the risk to corporations is they can be taxed by more than 100%. And if you have a system, and the most important aspect from a public finance standpoint is to have a system in which states have the same allocation factors. If everybody had a uniform formula, then you would have you'd be able to achieve this taxation of 100% of corporate income, which would be the most equitable approach. And as the testimony has indicated very clearly, we're not in that phase. We seem to be in a transition phase. The double sales, double weighting sales movement has gained momentum, and as the testimony indicated, we've gone to a number of states with a single sale. So we're seeing the uniformity breaking down. And what happens when you do emphasize a particular factor, you do have differential tax rates, and there is the prospect of individual companies having very little tax base if they have virtually no sales in a particular state and have greater representation of those other two factors. So you do run the risk of doing that, and that would certainly be the case if you were to emphasize any of the individual factors. So that risk does run through. What I have done with the Dash 4 amendments is basically, or very simply, they stopped the adjustment to the sales factor after 3 years, make it a 3-year phase in, and leaves it at the end of for the 2003 corporate tax year at 80% sales, 10% property, and 10% payroll. It essentially stops at that point. Now, that's done on an annual basis. You can adjust the timing on that if that would be your preference as well, to do it every other year, for example, to phase that out.
In terms of the revenue impact, I've provided you with a chart that Ed's worked out, which shows you the sales factor and going from current 50% up to 100% and the revenue impacts as a result of that. The Dash 4 amendments do not have any impact on the revenue estimates for the 9901 or the 201, 203 biennia. That stops at $57 million in 0103 when you go to the 80%. The 0305 would not have that impact. It would have an impact of about roughly $90 million instead of $135 million it shows there for the 0305 period when it would be fully phased in. I would also emphasize, and when you get into the 0305 period, I think the dynamic aspects that were talked about in the last in testimony and in the discussion last week, that's when you would begin to feel those, I think, more in terms of actually influencing the flow of revenue to the extent that those come in. And our position has been on those that we feel like there will be some dynamic feedback, some positive response, but we're just not in a position to be able to assess the magnitude or the timing of those feedbacks.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, Rick.
So, Paul, what you're saying is that the revenue impact here is likely overstated.
Representative Witt, the revenue impact is just based on the 95-97 corporate liability, taking those 3 years and apportioning it out that way. So, in a sense, if you do have some positive feedback effects, it would be overstated. And certainly with respect to, another key point I think about the testimony is that if you're looking at a total revenue impact, we're not just the corporate income tax side, I would feel comfortable in saying there will be some positive feedback.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Paul, is there any studies from other states that have gone to the single weight on revenues to see what has happened in terms of development in those states that's led to additional revenues?
We have some very tentative preliminary kinds of findings that came out that have shown that there is some significant effect. Historically, the argument has been that there's no formal analysis showing it, so the results are very tentative at this point. If you look at the states that have gone to it, their revenue impact estimates, Illinois, for example, did show a negative revenue impact estimate. Now, whether that turns out to be true or not is yet to be seen. It's very difficult for any of these kinds of analysis to end up, even after the fact, confirming what those effects are, because a correlation does not imply causality. And as we've seen in terms of some of the discussion of shifting to the double weight factor here in Oregon, we did have a huge jump in corporate income tax revenues, but it occurred at the same time we saw a huge jump nationally. So it's very difficult to isolate those factors and try to break them out. We do have some tentative evidence that there is some positive effects.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Okay. All of you or your guests have some information to enlighten us with also?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your looking at amendments and considering all the options on the bill. I guess perhaps it'd be worth backing up what Paul just said and reminding that the AIM Gross 1275 came to you after lots of discussion in the Senate as to what the best way to mechanically put together a bill like this would be. And that's why this bill is phased in over 5 years starting next biennium at 10%. From both the consumer, the corporate taxpayer, and the department's administrative viewpoint, this was an easily administered, easily functioning bill. Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips from representing Nike today, but to address your issue on the amendments, the 100% sales factor does remove the need for an audit on property, doesn't remove the need for an audit on personnel. Those are costly, time intensive, both for the consumer, customer, corporate, as well as the department. So there are issues there. The sales factor is an easier way to do a check and an audit. Those are some of the discussions. Additionally, the support for this was broad range from the Willamettes to the Nikes to the Adidas to the AEA. You heard from Tech and Sequent, and the representative Witt's question, the Tech representative talked about having an industrial site trying to recruit businesses here, and the fact that we cited Rockwell International immediate response to a sales factor only state bringing their corporate headquarters here versus Oregon system, where right now there is a disincentive because of the way property and payroll are calculated from expanding and siting facilities here when you consider it sales only. We did show you this map, which is what Paul referenced, and the department letter from the Department of Economic Development showing that this type of a change is consistent with economic development program functions. OTR did, Oregon Tax Research, did give a review, Representative Witt, of the other states and the other studies that were done out of the Midwest to try and address this static versus dynamic model. And then for the committee, I reviewed the governor's Oregon tax system review that talked about these issues. It breaks down to economic development. What is good for Oregon over the long term? There is a disincentive for reinvestment, and there is a uniformity issue, and this would address those two concerns. And we cited for your reference the Business Week article of May 10th, where Rockwell was cited. We also cited the three main factors of why this change makes sense is stability in the tax base, diversity. We're again getting back to the representative's question, Mr. Chair. When you take in, you look at this from a static corporate view versus what it will do for personnel and property taxes, that's tremendously important. And then the final issue is how do you get over this, this dynamic issue. The opposition, we know there's some concerns about when you look, how do you look at a static model and then how do you move it out, and whether there is an opportunity where people pay no taxes at all. That's not what we're trying to get at here. So, Mr. Chair, that's the synopsis of the situation right now. I don't know. I have Gary Odegaard, the tax manager for Nike, here that might be able to address for you some of the corporate issues if you wish.
Well, respond to the 80-10-10 versus just 100%.
Representative Strobeck, my name is Gary Odegaard, and I'm the U.S. Region Tax Manager for Nike, Inc. I guess I can make a few comments with respect to that. Basically, single-factor sales, like or double-weighted sales or equally weighted sales, are apportionment methodology. And what it does is it seeks to apportion corporations doing business in multiple states to single states. What the single-factor sales methodology does, it treats all taxpayers the same. What it does is you're subject to a corporate income tax based on your access to Oregon's marketplace. If you make sales into Oregon, you pay corporate income taxes. What it does do, it removes the incentive to locate property and payroll in your state. There's no disincentive from a sales perspective. A corporation will always want to maximize sales. Everybody sells their product into states the same. You know, your FOB price is the same. Nike sells their shoes into Texas the same price that we would sell them in New York or New York City, which has a 20% tax rate, or Texas, which has a single factor sales, or Oregon. They're all treated the same. I could answer any technical questions you may have regarding how Oregon's tax methodology works, unitary, non-unitary, worldwide combined, Water's Edge combined reporting. Senator Strobeck touched on those issues last meeting, and that he sort of made a couple of mistakes. I'd be happy to address those.
You had to be here to appreciate that. I guess specifically, Mr. Chair, to your amendments, the 80% would move us along the track. We would certainly like the bill referred down to Ways and Means as it sits right now. If the committee's decision to go with 80%, we would certainly respect that decision, and I would just encourage you to move to the 80% as soon as possible, because as you, I'm sure you've all read this bill and you look at how it's phased in, it's actually over. Starting next biennium, there'll be two legislative sessions in before this bill is entirely phased in, and the 90 and 100% would be there anyway, as after the, I believe, the 2003 legislative session, it goes 2004-2005. So, Mr. Chair, specifically to answer your question, the 80% would be a positive step forward. We would just encourage you to get there as quickly as possible within the 3-year time frame versus the 5-year time frame.
I'd just like to comment about studies that are out there in the marketplace. There was a recent study by the University of Chicago. They were the latest state to go to a single-factor sales. Their study over a period of time predicted an added 3% jobs growth, an additional $200 million in revenue growth for the state over a 3-year period. There was also the testimony that was entered into by the Union Bank survey of 1997 corporate facility expansions, and there was like 12,000 different occurrences of either a factory expanding or a new factory or another facility, and the Midwest, which is predominantly superweighted sales factors, got over 50% of those new facilities. Oregon, out of the 12,000 got like 13, which was, you know, pretty close to what Hawaii got. So there definitely is, believe it or not, there is an incentive to locate your plants in states that superweight the sales factor, removing the disincentive to locate property and payroll.
Any questions?
Yes. Okay, well,
by going to 80%, Mr. Chair, are we going to get that? Would you think in a dynamic analysis, would we be getting to our maximum as quick? If we were able to go for 3 years, 80%, and then some point in time go to 100, we'll be getting, how much of a slowdown is that going to be as an incentive? Do you have any action? What's this going to do to us?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the Senate, we discussed a variety of options, including separating manufacturing and non-manufacturing, so you'd get an immediate jump from the non-manufacturing to the economy. The other states that are contemplating it are moving rather rapidly, and again, if you look at the Midwest where the sites are located and the growth is going on in, throughout the United States, phasing it in over 100% over 5 years is actually starting next year's over 7-year period is about the length, the end that you can go and still be in front of the curve. And we cited for you the unitary tax debates of 93 or of 83 and in 89 when we went to the double weighted and it phased in 91 and what actually happened to the economy and the huge growth that we saw there. I think if you went to 80%, you would certainly see a kick to the economy. The question is those that are looking at us versus 80% versus those states that are 90 and those states that are going to 100%. And then there are other factors that come in expansion and diversification too. So while it would be an overall positive representative, there would be some drawback to it.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yeah.
Did you give us any information, Paul, on the states that were at 80, those at 90, and those at 100?
Well,
was there any analysis, sir?
We did provide you, and Matt Evans from OTR, Oregon Tax Research, did give you some material. I can't pull out of memory, but each state was listed in your packet. Paul, do you have it? Where they were?
Are you talking about how many have gone to 100?
Yeah.
According to this OTR report, page 2, is 8 states located primarily in the Midwest have adopted an apportionment formula
in which the sales factor is 60% or more, four of these states have gone 100%.
Yeah. So, and one other, since that map was done, is moving towards 100%. So there's a, I mean, it ranges from 80, I think Michigan is 90, if I recall correctly, 90, and then there's 400 percenters.
Wisconsin is currently 70, 15, 10, and they're moving to 100%. Minnesota, I believe, is 80, 10, 10. Nebraska is 100%. Iowa is 100%. Missouri is 100%. Illinois is 100%. Michigan is 90, I guess. And Ohio, I forget what Ohio, and Texas is 100%. And North is...
So that's a sampling, though, but there is in the record someplace that complete list. Sorry, I can't pull it from memory.
The situation changes, you know, almost daily with states enacting new legislation.
There's so much interest. I gave most of my stuff away. I can't find it either. Okay.
Other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Witt.
No, it seems to me that from an economic development standpoint, with so many states moving to, or at least considering moving to, taxation based simply upon sales, that we are putting ourselves at a disadvantage economically if we don't give serious consideration to the same approach to this. Also, when you think about it, an income tax is designed to be based upon income, not upon property. You pay a property tax on property. An income tax is based upon the net income that is generated, which frankly is more directly apportioned, it seems to me, back to sales and revenues, not to property, because property is being taxed, as I said, on a different basis. So because of that, I'm not really favorably disposed to the dash four. I like the bill the way it's written.
Chair.
Very well.
I agree with that analysis. I'd much rather stay with the 100%.
Any other comments?
Moving toward a work session or just...
We're in a work session.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, just before you move the amendments, or before you move the bill, let me just say...
Thank you.
A couple of things. Yeah, thank you. I think the testimony that we've heard is any movement toward a greater emphasis on sales is a positive one. And while we're hearing right here from folks who will definitely benefit and some of the larger companies, we also heard last week from a longtime Oregon company, Longview Fiber, that actually has a great deal of business in Oregon but would be tremendously disadvantaged by going to 100%. Because of where they happen to be situated with their corporate headquarters outside the state, doing a great deal of business on contract and other methods inside the state of Oregon. So what I think we've heard from here is a sampling of the market, but not the entire market. And if in fact moving in a 3-year period 80% is positive, I think that does give future legislatures the time to evaluate that. As well as take into account the impact on the other businesses that we haven't heard from that are not bringing this bill to us specifically as advocates of the 100%, and then have a chance to reevaluate that over time. I'm not, at this point, comfortable with throwing out an entire system, not knowing what it's going to do to all the other companies that may be similarly situated to a company like Longview Fiber. Also, let me say that while I support the economic vitality of the state, I think it's interesting that the most recent SIP agreement that Washington County cut with Intel has a penalty for excessive growth when it comes to additional employees. And I think that's a trend that I'm seeing, that Oregonians are not particularly favorably disposed to having
you know, thousands more U-Haul trucks moving up from California as we experienced in the early part of this decade. So for that reason also, I think it would be helpful for the companies that are here but not necessarily start attracting a whole lot more population shift as we saw earlier in the decade. So that's why I think that 80% is a good start, and it certainly is something that can be evaluated into the future. It would give us an advantage on the West Coast regionally. So that's the reason I'm leaving.
Mr. Chairman?
It's
interesting. You know, I appreciate Longview Fiber's point of view. It's also interesting they come from a state that does not have a corporate income tax. And we are a relatively high income tax state. And that alone creates some competitive disadvantage. I think what we don't want to be doing is penalizing our home-based companies, and we should be looking for every opportunity that we can to support companies that are headquartered here, that have made the investment here in terms of employment and in terms of capital and in terms of property, to minimize their tax burden so that they can compete more effectively. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, certainly an 80% weighted sales factor is an improvement over what we have today. But looking at all these states in the Midwest that are going to the 100%, looking at the fact that the state of Washington doesn't have an income tax, the state of Nevada doesn't have an income tax, the state of Texas, I don't believe, maybe they have a corporate tax, I don't think they have a personal tax. You know, I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that our homegrown, locally headquartered businesses that make these investments in the state have an opportunity to compete vigorously around the state, and for those reasons, I continue to support the bill the way it's written.
I need to, I'm sorry that I came in late this morning. I have had some delays, but I do want to point out that I'm uncomfortable with the overall bill, and it isn't so much necessarily with the bill itself or the concepts being put forward in this bill, but for the same things that I've been saying for what feels like weeks and months now. We're making all of these changes to our tax system without an overall clue as to how it's all going to work out. And I've decided that rather than become repetitively redundant here, I'm going to read a little bit from John Kitzhaber's letter, which we just picked up this morning, expressing his concern about how we are doing tax law changes that further jeopardize our school funding system. And we're all working to find, he says, I'm concerned that while we're all working to find the dollars necessary to fund our basic education system, we're at the same time considering tax law changes that will reduce the revenue available to schools and other critical public services. And so I cannot in any good conscience vote for this bill in whatever form it is until we have some overall structure as to what we're doing here.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Mr. Chair, I also have reservations about this bill. I think we should understand and be straightforward that this is a form of sales tax. It may be in our minds the hope that this tax will export taxes outside the state and reduce the profit of those located outside the state, but the all likelihood is paying this increased tax simply is paid by increasing the price of products here in Oregon. It's a very interesting sales tax because it's not a wide and deep sales tax. It's a narrow, targeted sales tax, primarily to out-of-state corporations. And this has broad implications. It's way late in the session for the type of analysis this deserves. I think it'd be very interesting to have the sort of study we talked about funding earlier in the session, which you look at the ultimate impact of the distribution of different major tax policy changes across the population. We've seen this shift in which as you reduce corporate tax revenue, the only place left to pick it up is on individuals or to simply not pay for the services that are necessary for the future of the state. We're in a situation right now where we look for decent school funding. We are looking to borrow the money for that school funding from our children to pay for their own education. This type of bill increases the dilemma that we'll face in the next few legislatures And we are not in a recession. It's not a time that we need to have a dramatic change to kickstart an economy. Level-weighting the sales factor in the past was a reasonable and prudent strategy that yielded decent benefits. But this is very dramatic change in comparison to that rather modest change and merits further study before heading down that course.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I've got a couple things about this. One, I would be inclined to support it in either form that you want to move it forward, although I'm sensing the votes may not be there for the Dash 4 amendments. As to the just general impact of the bill, I respectfully disagree with Representative Merkley's analysis. And I think that to look at this in the short-term impact is in fact short-sighted. I think that one of the advantages of moving in this direction, either the 80-10-10 or the 100%, will be to continue the vitality of Oregon's business and industrial climate, which is in turn going to help ensure that we maintain what has been a phenomenally strong and long-standing period of economic strength, which in turn then plays into continued support of all of our revenue-based programs and services, including schools. I am mindful of a couple of things. One, of the governor's letter, and two, that this is not the only tax proposal with substantial revenue impact on the table. That's why I'm inclined to say I'd be prepared to move it in either iteration down to Ways and Means. Let's get it on the table, or it will be part of the discussions that will shape the end of the session and move forward from there.
I'd also, in response to Senator Rasmussen, we've heard this same discussion. However, I haven't seen a bill that changes everything about the tax system, period. Fundamentally changes everything 100%. We always do things in incremental change. You can't get 100% turnover of the entire tax system. It just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And to criticize a change on the basis that it's not part of a 100% package, I think is impossible. I don't think you could ever get to a point where you say, "I'm going to change every tax provision that we have and create something brand new." What we're doing here is changing course as we've done in the past, as the world and national economy changed. I think that's a logical response.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think that there is most changes happen on it. I agree with you that most changes happen on an incremental basis, but what I do not understand is how we are going to get out of here with over $300 million worth of votes between the two committees to reduce taxes and still get to a decent school funding number. Now I sound like a repetitive record. I've said this on the floor. I'll say it in committee. I'll keep saying it in committee. But and I lay awake at night, and I think, my life would be so much easier if I just dealt with a bill on a bill-by-bill basis, and then I'd have a nice, wonderful voting record, and everybody will love me because I voted for their little whatever tax exemption or tax reform that's there. But I find myself in a very uncomfortable place of conscience that says, we are here to balance a budget, and yet we are moving these bills forward that do not move us toward any sense of a balanced budget, but it moves us farther and farther away from doing what we need to do for K-12 funding and human resources and higher education. So, I don't know, I'm frustrated. I'm not enjoying myself here. I don't love fighting with you. I get up in the morning and say, well, how can I beat up on my chair this morning? I'm just plain frustrated that we don't know where we're going, or how we're going to get out of this building with a balanced budget that's good for all Oregonians. And until that comes before me, I guess I'm a cranky vote.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. I got a slightly different point from what Representative Rasmussen said originally, and it was not that anyone expects us to do an overhaul of our entire tax system in one fell swoop, but just that we do have the means to take a look at the tax
system before we start to tinker with it, and I think we've sent the tax incident study so forward hoping that that's exactly what would happen. I mean, that one of the key points that came out of the governor's study group was that there is a great deal of dispute about what the effect of business taxes is in this state and who ends up ultimately paying them, and it seems like in the absence of that information and the answers to those questions, it's somewhat irresponsible to start moving the pieces around. That's the fact that I think, you know, we could argue that the revenue impact has been overstated, but I don't think anyone has argued that it has a neutral impact, and I think that is weighs pretty heavily on us at this point in the session. I have a problem with moving this forward in any form.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Witt,
I will argue that it has a positive impact. Now you can't ignore the changes that are occurring around you in other states and around the world when it comes to taxation of business. And I would point out if we don't want to balance our budget and we don't want to fund our schools properly in the future, then the thing to do is have a business environment in this state that is not friendly to economic development and economic growth. And other states are going to the single weighted factor. There is competition around the country and around the world to encourage economic development and business location and business growth. And if Oregon acts like it can operate by its own and close in its borders and act like these changes don't affect what happens in Oregon, then we're being very, very foolish, and we're shortchanging our future. I think there is good justification for this, and I also think that sales are the appropriate factor on which corporate income should be based. That's where profits come from. It comes from revenues. Not only buildings you have stretched across the state, it comes from revenues. It comes from sales. So for those reasons, I continue to support the bill the way it's written.
Representative Wells.
Mr. Chair, looking at the last 10 years, the growth of public companies in this state and what they have contributed is phenomenal. I come from an industry that has been here historically much, much, much longer than they have. But we also support those public, those C-Corps that have invested in the case. We think it's very important to do that. We know we can't apply all the jobs of environmental challenges that we have in this state presently. But we have experienced downturns, but we have to provide an opportunity in the future. And when we look at the bigger picture in the long term, certainly those corporations that come in here and want to make those investments, I think we're going to see gains. Again, that will way overcome this, I think, initial projection of revenue loss. And I certainly support the 100%, and I understand that other companies that are public can do business in Oregon a little differently that will certainly change the way they're taxed, too. They can change some of that. So looking at that, and as I did, and I talked about it over the weekend, I will support certainly that 100% at the outset.
Okay. Well, I'm going to move the dash 4, A4 amendments to Senate Bill 1275. We've had a lot of discussion. Why don't we call the roll on that, please?
Representative Kapoor?
Aye.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Federley?
Aye.
Representative Wells?
No.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
No.
Vice Chair Rasmussen?
No.
Vice Chair Witt?
Aye. Pulled out the dash fours, and Chair moves Senate Bill 1275 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Any more discussion?
Thank you. I'm a little uncomfortable with this bill. I think it represents a huge change in our tax system, and I don't feel like I've had enough conversation about it. I know it's been a lot of time over in the Senate, and that's why it was so long in getting to us here, but I will support sending it to Ways and Means so that we can continue the conversation. I think it's an intriguing issue to look at, and I would like to study it further before I vote on the floor. Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Kapoor?
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
No. Representative Shetter? Aye. Representative Will? Aye. Representative Wood? Aye. Vice Chair Rasmussen? No. Aye. Senator 1275 will go to Ways and Means. We do pass. Thank you all very much. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1275. We are not going to do timber today, so the only thing we have left is 2732. Actually, if he doesn't get here, that's okay. You can see the this was a bill that was requested by Representative Westland, and it is for a specific, let me open a public hearing, House Bill 2732. Anybody here wants to speak on House Bill 2732? Nobody signed up.
Yeah.
Please just tell us what the bill is.
Sure. Chairman Stelbeck, members of the committee, this bill allows a property tax exemption of real and personal property for volunteer fire departments. So it clearly defines in the bill that a volunteer fire department is a nonprofit corporation organized to provide fire protection service in an area. This exemption begins July 1st of 2000. So when I went through and looked at various lists of fire departments throughout the state, there really only are about two that I found that fall underneath this category. And one of them, which is in Wasco County, is a Ty Valley Volunteer Fire Department, and due to an audit by the Wasco County Assessor, they found in 1995 that the County Assessor should have been giving them a property tax, should have been assessing property taxes on them, because there used to be a bill, or there used to be in law until 1989, this exemption for volunteer fire departments, that was eliminated in 1989, so since then they have been taxed. There aren't that many of them throughout the state. So in Wasco County, that only amounted to about $100 a year of local property taxes that they charge them from the land. And then the other one is in Deschutes County, and they pay some personal property, and it's a nonprofit corporation which runs that particular fire district, and it's about $600 per year. So it's really the revenue impact of less than $1,000 per year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Close public hearing on House Bill 2732. Open a work session on House Bill 2732.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
Move House Bill 2732 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Rasmussen. Move House Bill 2732 to the floor with the due pass recommendations. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, it'll move to the floor of the due pass. We'll ask Representative Westland to be the carrier since he sponsored the bill.
Could we ask him if there's any impact on the Portland area for this particular bill?
According to the revenue analysis. Okay, close the public hearing, the work session on House Bill 2732. We are done.
Oh. Are we meeting tomorrow?
Yes, we are. We'll probably...